Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for this program. Today's show is a special. It actually came about as a result of reading two books recently. Trace Hackett released a fascinating book in Deadlines and Commitments. In it, he poses the question, is rock music dead? Last week, I read John Cherry's provocative Better Than Lennon. This book poses the question of who had the major influence on modern popular music. Was it John Lennon or Paul McCartney? This argument has been raging for decades. My research shows that the camps are fairly evenly divided into three groups. There's the pro-Lennon group, the pro-McCartney group, and the why can't you just leave them all alone group. To help sift through the data, I've assembled an awesome panel. John Cherry, who ignited this discussion, is with us today. John, great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Simon. Good to be on here with everybody.
Trace Hackett is also with us. Good afternoon, Trace.
Hey, good afternoon to everybody.
We also have the owner of Glass Onion PR, Billy James. Billy has been involved in the music industry for a very long time. We won't discuss how old he is. His company, Glass Onion, specializes in promoting classic rock bands. His client list reads rather like the Rock Hall of Fame roster. He is also the author of 8 books. His knowledge of the rock industry is enormous. Billy, it's great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me back on.
We also are joined by Randy Pratt. Randy is the owner of Hyperspace Records, a label that specializes in new material from classic rock artists. He's also the bass player of the great rock band The Lizards. Randy is also classed by most as a walking encyclopedia of music. Randy, it is great to talk to you again.
Hi, guys. Good to be here.
I did invite David Haber, who runs the influential BeatlesNews.com website. However, he had a previous commitment, so he can't be with us this afternoon. He has, however, been following this debate on his site. We seem to have caused quite the furore setting up this program, and his readers seem as divided over the issue as everyone else. If you're listening in and you would like to ask our panel any questions or make any comments, our switchboard is open. The number to call is area code 646-378-1120. And please be patient with us. We will get to your calls as soon as we can. Alternatively, you can ask your questions in our chat room. We are monitoring it. John, you started this debacle, so I think you should kick off this debate. In your book, you come down firmly in the belief that McCartney was the better musician, has the better pedigree. Tell us in a nutshell what you base that decision on.
Based it on several things, Simon. Actually, the continued title of the book is The Music and Talent of Paul McCartney. So I also tried to get into the different aspects and talent that Paul had playing the different instruments, what he did as far as a solo artist as well. And my premise, I was really kind of just listening to his latest CD this spring, and I just always kind of came to me that it was just great that he was still putting out this great music and maybe somebody needs to write about it. So that's where it came about. And then when I'm deciding who to write, who to write against, I guess, in some way or whatever. And I said, well, John's got to be the second choice because he has such an immense talent. And so that's where the title came from. And so I went back through with my significant Beatle library that I have and went through a lot of what I had as far as research, started writing it in a chronological order with the Beatles and then as solo artists, and then I'm really on through Paul's career as well. And it just came to me more and more as I was writing the book, even though I had the premise in my head already, that Paul was the more accomplished as far as with the Beatles, and you can see by record sales kind of really backed me up, and we can get into that later. And then as a solo artist, they both stumbled a bit at times, but I think Paul then also, between 1970 and 1980, also had a much more accomplished career than John with different varieties of music. So that's really where the whole idea came from.
Okay. Now, in your book, you do cite numbers, you know, numbers of number one hits and how many weeks and blah, blah. Those statistics do seem to bear out what you're saying. He was a bigger influence than John Lennon.
Well, yes, I think so. And I think the Beatles were, from all you read, were a democracy. So they did choose these songs in most cases. I know George Martin and other people were involved in some degree sometimes in some of the discussions about which songs to put out as singles. So I have to believe that the Beatles, in most cases, decided that these were the songs that they wanted to put out. And when you look at the number of ones, you know, as a Beatle and as a solo artist, Paul is really very, very far ahead of John.
Okay. I think I have to hand the microphone over to Billy because I suspect Billy has a slightly different view.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm a huge Beatles fan. I love John, Paul, George, and Ringo equally. I mean, I love them, solo and together as the Beatles. And you know, so for me, I read the book. You know, there was a lot of great information in it. The book really read smoothly. I mean, to be able to cram the Beatles' entire career and solo careers into 120 pages is amazing to me. So, I mean, you actually did it, and there was some things I learned in there. So, I mean, so you did a good job at that. I mean, and there are some facts to find out, and you did back it up with some figures and this and that, and it is thought-provoking. My trouble with the whole thing is that the premise of the whole book, that you're pitting one against the other, which I find who's the better musician, Steve Howe or Rick Wakeman?
Oh, Rick Wakeman.
Come on, that's a ridiculous question, you know? I mean, and if you come to it, well, frankly, George Martin was more talented than all four of the Beatles, and then if you come to it, I mean, technically, John McLaughlin or Frank Zappa are more technically, from a learned aspect, more proficient than any of the Beatles. So, I mean, comparing the two like that, and then if you look down to it, well, and again, this is all opinion because a lot of it's from your it's all subjective here, you know, and again, I hope you have a thick skin because, you know, you're treading on sacred ground here. You're treading on the Beatles, and you're treading on John Lennon fans, and so you're going to have a lot of people going to be coming at your throat there, so I wouldn't put your personal address. but at any rate, and let's put it this way, none of the Beatles actually, as solo artists, in my opinion, ever came close to what they accomplished as the Beatles. I mean, they touched on it in certain elements, but none ever came close to what other than maybe Harrison on All Things Must Pass, a couple of the tracks came close. But, you know, so to sit there and try to say who was the better musician or the better artist, they both, it's so subjective, and there's so many different factors and whatever in it. I mean, and the other thing, you know, and I got a lot of points there I wrote down, so I'm like, I'll get back to some of it, but you can't also confuse quantity and quality, okay? You know, yeah, I would say McCartney's more prolific than Lennon because he just put out so much stuff, you know, and again, but not everything he put out was great. I mean, in a lot of opinions, you know, some of it was fantastic, some of it wasn't, you know, and I mean, the same with John as well, but I mean, McCartney was a lot more prolific, and also, of course, his career spanned how many more years, how many decades since Lennon was murdered, you know, so you're cramming in all that type of stuff in there as well, you know, so I just find that, you know, the way you wrote the book, I think you could have written it, wrote it in a different way. Now, of course, you're going to get a lot of press this way, and you're going the Andy Kaufman sort of, you know, the Andy Kaufman route of trying to get people angry and to get, you know, and maybe that's your motive. And, you know, and maybe because there's 1,000 Beatle books out, this is the only way you're going to be able to get seen. So, I mean, in that respect, well, you know, maybe that's it's a good publicity ploy right there. But on the other hand, I don't know. I think that with so much praise to McCartney, you could have gone at a different, just a different title and a different sort of angle, I think, that you're not going to, but you're going to piss off a lot of people, man. That's just all I can tell you.
Okay. Right. I knew Billy would come through.
I got a lot more to tell you, let me tell you. Okay. I read through that book and took notes, so, you know.
Right. Randy, you're our resident musical historian. What's your view on this subject?
I like Billy, I'm a huge Beatles fan. I would just like to first poke fun at the whole concept of what we're doing here. We used to say, like, gee, I guess the Beatles would have been a lot better if Buddy Rich had been on drums and John McLaughlin had been the guitar player, right? They would have been a better band then, right? And you realize how ridiculous that statement is just by saying it. Or like, I guess if Michael Jackson had written the songs, they would have sold more records, and that would have been better, you know? I think that rock music came in and usurped jazz as the main kind of music, and what it did was it took away that element of judging music by in that way. It's more like, basically, if you've got the personality and style, you don't have to be the world's best trumpet player. You just wrote a cool song, so you get a hit. You know, I mean, it's almost more of a personality, having something to say thing than who's the best one. You know, like what Billy said about quantity and quality. I mean, are you going to compare Silly Love Songs to Imagine? I mean, you know, I don't see the point. I don't know what better means, really. If you just mean better for purely sales figures and how many concerts they played, I mean, I will say that when people ask me what's the best concert I ever saw, I immediately say Wings at Madison Square Garden. It was the best show. I'm a bass player. McCartney, what blows my mind about him, and I just got his last DVD for the opening the new stadium in New York, and I was amazed. I'm watching it with my wife. I'm going, this guy still rehearses. I mean, they're up there. He's got all these tight little riffs in the song, and obviously he plays bass. I mean, he's got chops. The band's really tight. They really work. I mean, you can imagine if John Lennon had gotten up there, he would have been almost like a Dylan kind of thing, where he would have just strummed the songs out. It wouldn't have been that kind of a guy who gets a band in a room and practices a lot, which I really appreciate. I really like that element of McCartney, and it makes him, keeps him young. You can tell he still works at it, you know. But I have to say that, to me, the bottom line in any artist is gravitas and depth and poignant, you know, having something to say when they talk, is it really meaningful? And I, although McCartney did make me cry a couple of times, and that song he wrote about Lennon, Here Today, I guess, was just beautiful in that. Well,
great song.
One of the most moving things I've ever seen him do. I have to say, Lennon, to me, hits me harder, you know, even though he doesn't hit a lot of the bases as just a riffing bass player who likes to get up and kick ass, you know. I don't know, whatever. It's hard to compare the two. I think they worked pretty well together.
Right. Okay, let's bring Trace into the picture. Trace, what's your view on the question?
Well, boys, I feel like I'm the Pete Best of this group, let me tell you. But I feel overwhelmed by all of your experience and all these things you're saying. I mean, you're bringing some great points. I think it's appropriate, though, having this conversation during the week where baseball has announced their Hall of Fame inductee, and it's just, you know, obviously the sports writers, the stuffiest group of old men in the world, get together and vote based on what? I don't know, but... I'm trying to look at music that way, musicians. Do we go by who has a better resume, or, you know, who rocks your world? You know, and I'm trying to go back and forth between that. Where I look at McCartney's career, amazing. and just the depth of that and the diversity. Then again, I look at, you know, Who's Rocks My World. My favorite song of all time is Instant Karma by John Lennon, and that's never going to change. So who do I vote for? I look at the same thing when I look at baseball. Who's had a nice career, you know, very impressive career, or who do you want to bat with, you know, full count and bottom of the ninth inning? My personal choice is Lennon, but I look, when looking at the resume, I have to agree with the book and go with McCartney. But either way, reading that book, it was just thinking about all those great Beatles songs. It was a great experience to read that book. I was glad I was given that chance. And I guess I just want to say that I'm a Stones, Dylan fan. I'm not a huge Beatles fan. I mean, I love the Beatles. I feel like everybody loves the Beatles, but I'm more of a Rolling Stones, Dylan guy. But I'm looking at all the different kinds of songs that are in this book, and I'm thinking to myself, the Beatles could have been any band they wanted to be, whatever direction they wanted. They could have been the best heavy metal band of all time. They could have been the best pop band. It could have been anything that they wanted to. But, you know, it took all four of them. And, of course, you know, the fifth Beatle, me, Pete Best, maybe not so much, but Martin, who I mean. But it's just, you start comparing these musicians, and, yeah, people are going to get pissed off because we have such a deep attachment to these songs. And, you know, I know a lot of young people who love the song Amazed by McCartney. And, you know, it's just, you know, how do you compare these? But I think the conversation is great, and as long as we can all, just keep in mind that it's for just an interesting Saturday afternoon chat, and I think it'll be worth having. So I'm interested to hear more from you guys, actually. So
hey, you ought to do you ought to do the next book. Who's better, Keith or Mick?
Yeah, definitely.
one reason the conversation's worth having is because, Even if I think it's a little ridiculous, people are always doing it. They're always going, this guy's
sure.
better than that guy. You know, so I mean, it's worth just discussing the concept of the discussion as much as the McCartney Lennon thing.
All right, I'm going to throw in something that has very little to do with music. When you look at these musicians, one of the factors that subconsciously, subjectively plays into the game is their lifestyle and who was the better role model. I see Paul McCartney as being a much better role model than
me personally, as a family role model.
Right.
Right. Okay, as opposed to a role model for people to look up to.
Well, in all aspects. I mean,
Jim Morrison's my favorite rock singer. He was a good role model.
Who's that?
Jim Morrison was my favorite rock singer. He was a good role model.
Yeah. LA woman.
What kind of role model do you need?
Yeah, I mean, see, Lennon, McCartney was a great role model as a family role model, but I don't think he didn't get the troops all in an uproar like Lennon could. You know, I mean, there's this big difference, you know. I mean, as a role model for the world and for people to follow, you know, Lennon had it over McCartney when it came to people, you know, rising people up and whatever. I mean, look, you know, there's that whole thing about the conspiracy that why he was murdered and all that stuff, which I'm not going to go into and everything. But, I mean, you know, he had a way of doing that. McCartney, he was a great family role model. There's no question about it. And Lennon was a terrible father up until he had Sean, you know, which is, again, I mean, you know, he did drop out in 75 because his son took president, you know. So that's, you know, that's another different thing why he, you know, there's just different things in what was going on in their lives. But again, you know, I can't think, you can't really say that McCartney was a better role model to the public. I don't know about that.
Neither one of them were too good at picking girlfriends.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Although, you know, in your book, you do really rag on Yoko, and a lot of people do, but the guy loved her, you know. I mean, you know, if you ever love somebody, he absolutely loved her. So what can you do? What can you say? I mean, you know, and she didn't go and sabotage the Beatles like every, you know, he loved her. And if he didn't find her, he'd have found somebody else and gone off with her. Instead of, you know, the guy got up to 30 years old and he was like, you know, it's time to leave the boys, and that's what happens, you know. I mean, and that, but the guy, and so in 75, everybody said, why'd you drop out of sight? Well, is, any of you guys have kids? I know Simon does. Does the writer, John, do you have a kid?
No, I do not.
You don't? Trace, do you have one?
Not in the plans yet, not in the plans.
No, okay, well, see, I have a little boy, you know, and I had to raise him for a certain reason, you know, for certain reasons on, you know, to be home and be there for him and whatever. And so, you know, when you were set in that position, like Lennon was at that point in time, well, on this little life and this boy all of a sudden took precedent of whatever, you know, I've done all I want to do, and screw it, I want to go into, this is what I need to do, you know. So
I don't think the role model thing should even come into the conversation.
I agree, you know.
My father used to love Sinatra, but as we got older, he started to not like him because he was a, it's such a creepy guy, and I go, Dad, who the hell cares?
Exactly. I mean, it's same with Woody Allen. It's like people seem to tend to, well, he's an incredible, to me, he's an incredible comic genius, but you have so many people that they tend to judge him on what he did personally, you know, with, and it's like ridiculous. You got to divide the personal life and I know this by working with a lot of these musicians and whatever, a lot of my heroes, that when you get to know them personally, they're not the gods you thought they were, you know.
They get enough punishment for whatever bad things happen in their personal life. It shouldn't affect the music judgment.
Right, your judgment on their art. Lives shouldn't be judged on their art.
Well, rather than just really talk about the role model, my comments about Yoko were how she negatively influenced John's music, where he let, and you know, and again, that's John's decision to put that out there as John Lennon, with Yoko also playing and writing and everything like that. I think if you look back, as a solo artist alone, John's early stuff was, to me, probably his best, and Yoko really was not involved in any part of the music.
She was around for Imagine, though. She was around when he did Imagine. I think that...
But if you look at the music itself, she wasn't writing songs. A lot of the songs from starting sometime in New York City, she was actually on the albums.
But she influenced him on so many greats, you know, the Julia and you know, I mean, she influenced him while he was writing on a lot of the stuff, you know, and again, she enabled him to, I mean, you know, after he married her, he was able to do as freaky of stuff he ever wanted to do, whereas he may not have done that type of stuff without her, but that was his decision to do it. I mean, it's not like she forced him to do it. She didn't force him to be on the records. He wanted her on the records, you know.
It's just like Paul and Linda.
Part of what I was wanting to say is John is putting that out, and he let her do that, and I think that's part of why he suffered, particularly after the first two albums, again, where she had little influence. People just really didn't want to hear Yoko for the most part.
Well, people don't really want to hear Linda with Paul that much either.
Linda writing her own songs and singing the songs solo.
I think that is a sign of John's greatness that he was great even with Yoko there. I think Yoko was a horror show, but John was strong enough to be great even with her sitting in the room, which is saying something, because she would be a party destroyer for just about anybody else.
Well, I'll look back at the, if John,
I mean,
John's lowest.
I wouldn't defend Yoko.
Yeah, John's lowest points. If you go back and look at like sometime in New York City, where that's where he really starts to get Yoko involved in singing and writing. Only two of those songs are solo written by John on that. And you know that Rolling Stone, who loved John, called it sloppy nursery rhymes. And then when John actually got away from Yoko again and did some other work, Walls and Bridges and things like that, he was back doing good music. And Double Fantasy itself was bashed to some degree, again, because of Yoko being back involved to some degree. Even though I thought John had really many, you know, well, the number of songs he had on there mostly were all good. So that's part of what I was trying to say, and also in the music, in as far as reviewing John's music as a solo artist.
I was thinking about it, fellas. I was thinking about this debate while I was Christmas shopping, and I have a good way of deciding who's better. It's just who has the better Christmas song. I think McCarty's is a little bit more uplifting than Lennon. So
I totally disagree with that.
I love that Lennon Christmas song.
I mean, how can you compare the Lennon Christmas song, the Happy Christmas compared to simply having a wonderful Christmas time? I mean, it's night and day. You know, but see, they're suggestive. To me, I think the Lennon song's far superior than that. Just like, again, in the book, see, this is all subjective. In the book, you said that you thought that Uncle Albert was a weak song. But to me, I think that's one of his great songs. You know, how could you say that's a weak song?
I just didn't really appeal to me as probably the best song on the album at all.
And then you say Rocky Raccoon is a great song, and I disagree with that. See, I mean, it's all very subjective. But again, McCartney comes up with some of the greatest stuff ever as well. I mean, the other thing you got to remember is, you know, and one of the things in your book is that, you know, Paul took the reins and the singles. Well, some of the conspiracy or myth theories is one thing is that McCartney was always trying to get his songs as the A-sides, and that's one of the reasons that pissed off John and was one of the bones of contention in the band. That's one thing I heard always. Another one is that McCartney was the go-getter. He was the one who wanted to take control. Yes, at the time when Epstein died, John Lennon had been tripping on LSD and had been doing it. Supposedly he did it an entire year, every single day, something like 1,000 hits of acid or something like that. And that's supposedly documented, and I don't know how many. So, yes, he wasn't able to take control of the band, and neither was George. You know, so, but McCartney also was a little bit more of a gung-ho, the guy that was ready to, you know, he just had more of the, wanted to take control. That, unfortunately, it became another bone of contention for the band later on, where he was almost overbearing when it came to the being almost a control freak.
I think I understand, and obviously you read about that when you see some of the comments that some of the other Beatles made. I think he also probably kept them together, and that was his attempt to keep them together as when Brian did die. So
right, I mean, it was a double sword. You can't fault him. But also, on the other hand, I mean, watch Let It Be. Look how he was getting on George on that one scene and getting irritable. You know, when George is saying, "I'll do anything you want," you know, I've been studying the Beatles for a million years like you, you know, so it's like, you know, there's just a lot of different things that were going on, and none of us really know what the hell was going on, to be honest.
When you watch Let It Be, they seem to drift away from time to time, and I think, you know, you can see also that at that point that Paul is trying to get the group together and do something. I guess you have to have a leader in some form or fashion, and he, you know, chose to do that and probably, you know, produced some great music from 1968 to 70 as a result because of some of that leadership. So I think, you know, it's a positive. I understand the negative part in a group like that with all that talent and chemistry and everything like that, but I'm not sure we'd have had the Beatles as long as we had if he hadn't maybe made that effort.
I'll tell you what, folks. People make a big deal out of that little testy moment in that movie, but to be honest with you, if you've ever been in a rock band, for them to even be civil to each other after 10 years of that kind of chaos together is unbelievable. I mean, they were very gentlemanly in that movie compared to most bands.
And you have to also know, right after that record, when they did Abbey Road, they were as tight and together. I just read on several different things that they were, on that record, it was a good feeling for all of them. They were all getting along. And so actually the final record they did, they were all quite friends toward each other. They weren't at each other's throats. They may have been on the White Album, but not on Abbey Road.
I'll tell you what, folks. Let's take a quick break here. I don't have any real Beatles queued up, but I do have a track by Jock Bartley of Firefall fame, who put out a tribute album to the Beatles. And let's listen to a track, Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say. It's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here.
Wait.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say. It's all right. Here little island, the smiles return into their faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say it's all right. That ice is slowly melting. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been clear. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right. It's all right.
Okay, I know I'm going to get beaten up because it wasn't, it
and
wasn't
George
the
was
original.
The best. George was the best.
Beautiful song.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And actually, I think that really is quite a nice tribute to the Beatles. Recently, I stumbled across a DVD that had been sitting in my pile for quite some time. It's called Composing Outside the Beatles. And it makes an interesting observation. It basically says that Lennon was headed for disaster with Yoko Ono. That there were three albums, Two Virgins, Life with Lions, and the Wedding Album. They were all poorly received. What saved him was what one critic calls anthem-neering. Creating anthems, give peace a chance, and to a certain extent, imagine. I'll just pour huge volumes of gasoline on the fire and say, let's face it, give peace a chance is a pretty crappy song. I mean, there's not much to it.
Good message, but maybe when you take the overall content of the song, possibly not a great one. But you know, part of what John was saying at the time, and you know, it's been mentioned that he did get the troops rallied, even though it didn't last long against the Vietnam War. And you have to admire him for that. But yeah, I would tend to agree about the song itself as far as quality.
Yeah, I say the same. Yeah, I say the same too. It's not a great song, Lennon song by any means, you know. I mean, it's a throwaway. It's just something, you know. Again, as I said, it's a message. It's a message song, and some, you know. And I guess for what it was at the time, you know, it became very successful. One of the ones you didn't mention in the book was the "Power to the People," because that was it wasn't a number one hit, but it was a pretty big hit.
Yeah, right. "Power to the People" actually gets mentioned in composing outside the Beatles, and that's just viewed as yet another anthem.
It is, but his singing is great on it. I mean, you know, he's the king of, if you can scream sing like Lennon can, and McCartney can too, that's what made those two great, that they could scream, they could sing sweetly, have sweet, wonderful, sweet voices, but also scream and melodically scream, you know,
right.
And then Power to the People, sort of a scream song almost, you know, but I think it's a great song, you know. But I agree with you. I don't think Give Peace a Chance is a great piece of musicality from John Lennon. You know, it's not like Imagine or Dream Number 9 or something like that, you know. But
Phillip, I want to throw Instant Karma in there. To me, that's a it's a generational thing. But here, but like I remember, I was young. A Nike commercial came on, and that music with the images, I just wanted to get outside and start, you know, running down the street and getting in shape and doing something with my life. I mean, to me, that song, I don't know if it's an anthem, but it's an emotional song in my opinion. I love it. So I don't know if that's in that group, but I feel
like
it's
great
Karma.
Great song. Does anybody know who's playing drums on it?
I don't.
No.
Randy surely does, don't you?
No, I don't. Who?
Alan White.
Alan White, right. Yeah. From Love Me Do Thing?
Who?
Well, no, from Yes. Yes is drummer.
Alan White.
I have never heard Randy stumped.
Well, I don't know if he's a big Yes fan, but ask him about somebody like Captain Beyond or whatever, and he'll tell you stuff none of us know.
I'm a specialist. I don't know everything.
You know, he knows everything about Sir Lord Baltimore and Cactus that none of us in the world would know. I mean, you know.
Or care.
Billy, you said that you had you had notes. you read the book and made notes.
Well, there was just a couple things. One of the things is that you were mentioning, John, that they were writing messages to each other in the songs, which is true. But I always heard that the McCartney song, that where he's saying let's hang up the boxing gloves and hand over the olive branch, was not. You said that it was on Wildlife. I think Dear Boy or whatever song was on Wildlife. I never heard that. I thought it was Let Me Roll It to You from the band On the Run.
I think Dear Friend, actually.
No, I'm pretty sure it's. I've never heard that. I've always heard it from McCartney himself. Let it roll it to you. Or let me roll it to you. Both of them are, but that's what I always heard.
Well, I think Let Me Roll It was a Lennon-like song, and to a large degree.
It is, but it's supposed to be
a
message. It's supposed to be a message to John, is what that song is supposed to be.
Yeah, from what I've read from my libraries, Dear Friend was really the sort of the hang up the boxing gloves initiation anyway.
I'd never heard that one.
I heard that when McCartney was coming over to Lennon's place to jam there in the 70s.
Three different times. They almost got back together to write.
They did it a few times, and then he came back one night, and Yoko answered the door and said John wasn't there when he was.
Yeah, there were some influences there. We can get into that. It's a whole other show almost, I think.
Right.
But, Billy, can I answer a couple of things that you mentioned earlier? Unless you want to go on with your list, you go ahead first if you want.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, I wasn't intentionally trying to make anybody angry. I think I tried to start my book off with
bullshit.
Come on, Simon. That I did choose John because I knew his music obviously was part of him, because I did respect his immense talent, even though, you know, he had his stumbles as well. And I didn't consider it. I wasn't thinking far enough ahead to say that's really a publicity play. Books had been comparable to him. This composing outside the Beatles that I've ordered. I'm interested to see that too, Simon, because you mentioned it. But nobody had really actually taken the opportunity to say in a book as such that I know of that one was better than the other and maybe why. So that's another reason I sort of did that. And I think Randy mentioned also about going to see Steve McCartney in concert and the show that he puts on. And, of course, you know, 21 out of the 36 at some point, whatever, had been Beatles songs. And he's able to perform those songs beautifully and keep that music out there, thankfully for all of us. I think also that makes a statement sort of backing up my premise to some degree. And lastly, probably the masses do speak, you know, and those numbers of sales are certainly a factor in all of this and all of my premise. And, you know, the numbers are overwhelming.
Nobody ever went broke underestimating the taste of the American public.
Yeah, you beat me to the line there. But
Randy, the king of the punchline.
And yet also I do see, I've heard somebody say that Electric Arguments, you know, under the Fireman label, that might be the best post-Beatles album ever done. And I certainly have a lot of respect for All Things Must Pass. Certainly Band on the Run, I think, has to be considered. And actually, maybe McCartney's last three.
Yeah, I think George was growing up to be the best of all three of them before he...
And a lot like John.
On All Things Must Pass, but I think from All Things Must Pass, it was downhill for George.
A little bit, except maybe Cloud.
Cloud Nine. That was good,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Cloud Nine was great. And, you know, maybe the same thing, it seemed like the same thing that happened to John to some degree happened to George when George went out and lost his voice in 74 when he was performing, you know, and I think he sort of took that personally. He sort of somewhat dropped out to some degree and didn't really ever get right back out there to any significant amount
as
far as doing concerts.
It's again though, it's just Paul is a lot more of a prolific. He just had a lot more energy and a lot more going, you know, that, and also again he had more of a stable home life going on at the time, which allowed him to be able to go out and pursue whatever things he was wanting to do, and so he was just, things are pouring out of him. I mean, the guy had so much albums, good or bad, you know. I mean,
one thing I love about Paul as a band guy is that he's a band guy. He gets bands together. They sound like they rehearse. You know, I mean,
right.
they work out the details, and I mean, I appreciate that element in him. You know, that he's still got chops on the bass, and he still can throw a lick in. They go, wow, that's a cool lick, you know, and
right.
You know, so you know that's cool, but that's, you know, that's almost like a, even though I love that, that's almost down the ladder of importance for a great artist. You know, an artist is, to sit down and play Imagine at the Piano, simple, beautiful song, deep and poignant lyrics that are just timeless, and every line is a masterpiece, and the melody is, you know, I mean, they can both do that, but that's like the bottom line, you know, to me. I mean, it doesn't even matter the sales or anything. That's just a song that means so much. I don't think Paul could have written a song like that. You know?
And one other thing, you know, keep in mind, and McCartney always said this, you know, that in the Beatles' lifetime, he said there were other bands that had great things out there, and I'm just paraphrasing here, but we had the secret weapon. We had John, okay? Even Paul said it, that you know, I mean, there was something about John and his writing and he was the leader of the band in the beginning, you know. I mean, it was John's band. You know, I mean, so, you know, Paul might have been there calling shots and this and that during the sessions and this and that, possibly because by the end of it, John was too stoned to do whatever at the time or whatever,
yeah,
you know.
I think he was kind of just getting ethereal and he didn't care about being the boss anymore. He just wanted to write, a beautiful
right.
song when it crossed his mind. Paul sounds like a guy who, like, wakes up in the morning and goes, I got to write a song every day kind of thing, you know.
And he
like,
probably does.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that Ruddles thing. He's sitting at the piano there, you know. I mean, and he's just more prolific. I mean, some people are able to write in tons and tons of stuff. Other people can't write that quickly things. But greatness comes out, you know.
John probably tried not to write anything that didn't matter to him, you know. Like, I think Paul would just kind of pump the stuff out. And,
right.
And sometimes you'd come up with great stuff by just pumping the stuff out. I'm not knocking that, you know, but...
Other people just come up with certain things, and that's what, you know, what's meant to whatever. And again, I mean, all throughout the Beatles, both had great songs and whatever. That's why I just find it hard to try to pit who's better. They're both great.
I think the best thing we can do with this conversation is debate the concept of the question, you know. I mean, because people do it so much, and it's kind of annoying, but you can't help but be drawn into it, you know.
Well, I mean, I know it's subjective about the music itself, because I mean, you can talk about a song like Imagine. I mean, you know, we can certainly probably pick out a McCartney song that maybe we favor strongly. But just talk about all this, you know, McCartney having the ability to just churn out the music. To me, that's talent. The music
it
part
is.
Again is somewhat to taste. I understand that to some degree. And that's why I try to, you know, again, you have to recognize the masses to some degree, maybe not, you know, totally.
There's a great book that came out, and it's not a music book, but they use the Beatles in it. I don't remember the name of it, but I saw this guy doing a lot of interviews on business channels and stuff, and he used the Beatles as an example of his description of what talent was. He said talent is the willingness and desire to practice. And he said the Beatles had this horrible gig offered to them in Hamburg when they were starting out that most bands would have thought was, you know, you play 8 sets a night and 6 nights a week and no money. And they said, but the Beatles looked at it as an opportunity to get great. And they wanted to play. They wanted to practice. And that's, that was his version of what talent was, that the talent grew out of. And I just watched this special on, I guess it was George Martin and the Beatles on television a couple of times recently, right. And the thing that struck me the most about it is, God, these guys just worked all the time, and they were together. There was really no goofing around. They weren't, if they were doing drugs, they were in the studio doing drugs, you know. They were just every day for 10 years, they were just doing music all day, every day, and that's part of how you get great. I mean, that's not all of it, but that, you know, you could put a lot of people in that situation, and they certainly wouldn't become John Lennon, but they would become the best they ever could become. And
exactly.
And I can tell you, I know people that I've worked with that I just saw such limit. I saw such potential in them, but they didn't want to work, you know, and nothing ever happened, you know. That's a big part of talent right there, that the Beatles worked their damn butts off and that stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was, if it wasn't doing an interview, it was a photo session, it was a TV session, it was a constant. But it was also, they were fueled by it. You know, they got all the clothes, and they got all the women, and they got all the, you know, I mean, things were just fueling them, you know, and then all the adulation and all the, you know, it just fueled them, you know. I mean, throughout. I mean, even mixed,
they
became so.
It didn't seem like they ever lost their work ethic, though. They were always just.
No. I mean, they knew it as a business as well. I mean, they worked their job, you know. Somehow they had excellent business ethic because they did it all and were constantly doing it. And you know, evolving constantly. How many bands evolved like that in 10 years? It just evolved amazing from the beginning to the end, you know? I mean.
And drag the rest of us along with him.
Simon,
and influence everybody under the sun. I mean, I represent a lot of Jock and that Firefall thing. I mean, I worked that record, you know, not why Simon's playing. It's an older record. But everybody I know of, from Kevin Godley, who I work with at a 10cc, to who actually did the production of the videos for Paul's last couple records, by the way, and to Peter Banks of Yes, to Andy Powell of Wishbone Ash, to Roy Albrighton of Nectar. They all cite the Beatles is the reason to why they got into music, you know. It's the reason why I got into music. I mean, and so it's just, you know, there's not any other band in the world, you know, that's as influential as the Beatles, and not as separate solo artists, but as the Beatles.
I think Trace was trying to ask a question.
Yeah, I had a question. A big part of my book is what's next for rock and roll. Who are going to be the bands that will step up and keep this thing going? And I have a question for you guys. I think Paul McCartney is a very good ambassador for rock as he's aged, and he's been a class act. And my question is, who would you like to see Paul McCartney like collaborate with? What young bands would you? Because I think that's one of my ideas, is that if rock's going to survive, these older rockers need to work with some younger bands and, you know, show the world that, hey, I'm still good. These young bands are good. They get together, they rock on, and they, you know, just get some good vibes out there to the next generation. So, what bands would you like to see McCartney, like, I don't know, to collaborate with in whatever form? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, I guess if you wanted to have the kind of magic you have with John, you'd want to have somebody who they kind of covered each other. Like, McCartney had an infallible sense of a pop hook, and John had that poignancy that he would throw the real Barbie meaningful thing into the song and make it deeper. So I guess you look for somebody maybe who could do that with him. I liked what he did with Elvis Costello. I thought that was a good, you could tell who wrote what, I thought, when you listened to that. I wish I was more familiar with new stuff. I mean, I would have liked to have heard him do something with Jeff Buckley. That would have been nice, but he's not around anymore.
Right. I don't know enough. I don't know
your knowledge, but I would agree on Costello, and my favorite song is My Brave Face, and you can see the influence of Elvis there. I mean, to me, that's as close almost to a Beatles song as you got.
Which one are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a great song. It's a great song. Right. It really is.
Right.
I like Veronica. Which one were you talking about?
My Brave Face, I thought, was a great song. I mean,
oh, yeah,
it,
right.
And it was a big hit. I mean, I heard it in the shopping center
they
the other
split
day.
On Veronica, too, right?
Yes.
That's a good song, too. I don't know if McCartney wrote that as well.
I think they
worked together on that. Yes, that's
so that's a great song as well. So there you go. Yeah. He had a good writing partner with him. You know, but
yeah,
you know,
I wish he would do more of that. I wish he would, go out and play with people.
Like to see him and Jeff Lynne together would be great. You know, I mean, I like
one thing I noticed though when I saw McCartney's band live was that the band was a little faceless. You know, they were the guitar players were very talented and strong and you know, but a little bit kind of bland in that way. You know, I guess that's something I wish that all big guys would go out and use people as good as try to get people as good as them to play with. You know, or at least try. You know.
Right.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because that was certainly some of the comments that were left on the article that I wrote. You know, McCartney's good, but he only shines because he hides behind mediocrity.
Nah.
Nah.
And I completely disagree. But
I disagree too. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I will say again. I'll harp on his last three albums. I think you know where he was. He didn't have a collaborator, and I think everybody might well hopefully would agree to some extent that they've been three terrific CDs, instead of albums. But I think maybe it's almost like he's had a resurgence.
Chaos to Creation was a great album, you know.
Right,
that was an excellent record. And the video, which actually Kevin Godley, one of my clients from 10cc,
mm-hmm.
produced, that, you know, the one from the new record was real innovative, too, you know. I mean,
And when he played that City Field gig, he did a bunch of songs from the album that was out at that time, which I thought was kind of brave.
Right, actually, Sing the Changes is one that you said that, you know, that you saw was really the main inspiration for the book.
But I want to oppose one kind of, it's an odd sort of thing, but, you know, Randy was right, that song that the McCartney wrote, the tribute to Lennon, Here Today, is a really beautiful, I mean, when I first heard it, it brought me tears and a gulp to my throat there.
I cried.
But think of the other side here. If McCartney had been murdered, would Lennon have written a song to him? Probably not. Probably not.
I think Lennon would have come around to admit it.
I don't know. See, I don't know if his that's the difference in those two guys is McCartney was openly always wanting to get back with him and this and that, whereas St. John, you know, never was really open. You know, he may have been, but he was always sort of fighting it or never, you know, there's a difference.
If
you look at that,
was,
though, right there, think about
you're
it.
Talking,
you know?
You're talking, it's been 20-some years, since 30 years since Lennon was gone. I mean, yeah, I think he would have...
Maybe
relaxed.
Eventually after 30 years, but I don't know, right after it happened, like, write such a beautiful song like that, you know, I mean...
Is that when he wrote that?
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. the record that came out. You know, George actually came out with the song, the first tribute song on his Somewhere in England, which was all those years ago. Remember that tribute song?
McCartney's
is better. Yeah, and McCartney's is just an amazing, you know, which it's kind of odd because a lot of people have not heard it, and it's
I had not heard it, and I was so happy. And he cried when he played it at that show, and it was...
It just goes to show you his, you know, McCartney has a lot of feeling. I mean, there's just something there that, you know, he had a lot of love for John, and there's just no question about it. I mean, they always said, my old fiance, you know, John, my old best friend, my old fiance. Unless you had a best friend, which I had one for 25 years before he went off and screwed up. But, you know, you have someone that close, and you write together and this and that, it's like an old girlfriend or an old wife, you know, they're still in your blood. And regardless of John said how many horrible things at the time, you know, up until later on, I mean, they still, and the thing about them getting back together, you know, supposedly another, you know, I did a book, hadn't come out, with Joey Mollen, The Bad Finger, and Joey tells me that, you know, he's close with May Pang, and May had told her that, yes, John was considering wanting to write again with Paul.
But unfortunately, when he did get
back together with Yoko, all thoughts of that did stop. Now, that's just something, you know, again, firsthand from Joey Mollen, from May Pang. So, you know, I mean, there, you know, what can you say?
I'd read that as well, and I think the pursuit was both ways, not one-sided of McCartney going to work with John. I think they both really did
work
back.
But I recently saw McCartney on Entertainment Tonight, and he said, you know, she asked him, you know, do you regret not getting back together? And he goes, not really. He goes, I think that, it, you know, it would may have destroyed the legacy. which I was surprised. I thought he was going to say something like he wanted to, but he said something completely to the opposite that he didn't want to.
That is together. Beatles together writing with John.
You could probably go back and forth on that, like in, if you asked them three times right in a row.
Right, they would say different things, you know. And I'd like to hear that song you were talking about, that they did a third song that didn't go on the anthology. You know, I didn't even hear anything about that. I hope it does come out.
Right, now
you know?
And then.
What is it? I mean, can you explain to us what it is?
Now and then, I think it's also, you know, recorded around the same time as the others. That
is it John doing the lead vocal?
Yes, it would be. Now, again, it may change. As I thought the additions that were made to Free as a Bird, Paul and George, particularly Paul's, I thought additions to that were terrific. And
hopefully
they were great. That would be the same type of song. And, yeah, my gut feeling is it'll come out at some point. I hope it will.
Along with the Carnival of Light. I thought that was supposed to come out, and no one's heard anything of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they may be saving it for some other production in the future, I guess.
Okay, let's do some absolutely shameless advertising here. I think everyone needs to be made aware of where we can all be found. Billy, I'm sure people are just dying to know where can they find you online.
Well, again, I have a couple things. Is that you can find me at ant-bee.com, which is ant-bee.com, which is my music site, because I have a music ensemble. That my first album actually came out in 1989 on the Bomp label as Ant Bee. So anyway, I've got you can go that way, and then you can find out about my books. I have a new book on Todd Rundgren, which is a second installment of a biographic series on Todd Rundgren, and out of a three or four volume set, so that just came out. And also I do publicity, and again I work with a lot of different musical artists, and Randy is one of the Lizards is somebody I work with as well for publicity. So, but you can find me at ant-b.com.
Randy, where can these classic rock artists find Hyperspace Records?
Well, you can look up the Lizards on thelizardswebsite.com, or I have a new band called Sharks, sharkswebsite.com. There's a couple of other bands coming up too, but the websites aren't built up enough yet, so I won't plug them.
Okay, all right. John, I know that people are just chomping at the bit to get hold of your book. Where can people find you and your book?
BetterThanLennon.com, pretty simple. There's some information. I do an update of a song of the month. Beatle News as such is on the website. If you buy it there, it's a little bit more expensive because I have to charge for shipping, being sort of a one-man show. But I autograph it, conclude a collectible bookmark, autograph it however you want. And also there's a contest. I'm sure you've seen the cover. Have you seen the cover of the book where there's ties to songs, albums, et cetera, where I have a contest going where people try to figure out what they mean. So that's the site there. I did actually have – there's also another book on there that I – my first book, which was called titled War on Us, How Policies and People Are Destroying America, that actually has a music chapter in it titled Music, Who Made It, Who Ruined It, which also may have, I think, also given me a little push towards doing this Better Than Lennon book.
And Trace, where can people find out if rock music is dead?
DeadlinesandCommitments.com is my website. I'm also at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. Valentine's Day is coming up, so what better way of saying I love you than giving them a deadline and a commitment, you know, or both.
Oh, man, how long did you spend thinking that line up?
Oh, no, it's all spontaneous.
All right. Well, one of the things that's been widely talked about is the influence of women on John and Paul. It's been written so in so many places. You know, it makes my head spin. Yoko would turn up at Beatles recordings, rehearsals, and poke a nose in. Sounds like a bad move. Was it a bad move?
Yoko Ono, is that name is synonymous with a talentless bitch who breaks up a great band. That's wow. If you look that up in the dictionary, that's what you'll see.
Yeah, we always have the no Yoko law, where in when you're rehearsing a band, where you're not allowed to bring the girlfriends or the
no Yokos,
you know, into the rehearsals and stuff like that. But the thing about it is, I mean, how many people who are dating or married or whatever is not influenced heavily by their mate to the point where it can be devastating to their lives or their moves in their lives? Very few of us are Sean Connerys, you know what I mean? I mean, or 007s, you know? I mean, it's just most, if you got a mate, believe me, you're influenced by them, you know? And if you're in a band,
so
and
choose,
I don't
so
know
choose
how...
Them, so choose them wisely.
She's just the poster person for all time. She's just a poster person for that type of thing, but it's just, you know, it's like anything else. And again, if you don't think that he would have been with somebody else, or he'd have been with 10 other women and doing who knows what stuff, you know what I mean? I mean,
well, his wife didn't screw him up,
and he didn't bring him into the studio.
But then on the other hand, he was a horrible father to his first son. His son today regrets how terrible, yet he was an incredible dad to a second son, you know? So, I mean, there's two different things about it, you know? She kicked his ass, I guess, you know? I don't know. She got him, you know, got him to act right, you know, when it came to having a kid. I don't know. You know, I mean, the bottom line is that he loved her. I mean, the guy loved her, you know? I mean, he got away and was with May Pang for over a year and whatever.
After he died, I remember Yoko came on and I said, you know what? He loved Yoko. Let me reassess Yoko. And then she said some of the most horrendous. Like, what did she say? That Paul McCartney was the Salieri to his Mozart or something. And I was going like, you stupid bitch. Why don't you just shut up? How dare you get in the middle of this? You know.
That's from her side. But once again, the guy loved her. You know. What can I tell you? You know. I mean, it's just,
well, it
you know.
His,
I mean, Frank
his,
loved Gail Zappa, and. You know, half these people, you know, who they choose, you know. I stopped liking Bruce Springsteen East. I don't think his wife adds that much to this E Street band, do you?
No, she doesn't subtract much from it either.
No, but I mean, it's just like, eh, you know, and I never thought, you know, you got the Linda, you know, I mean, you add your wife into your band and stuff, you know. It's like sort of, I don't know, you know, I mean... But he loved her. What can I tell you? That's the only thing I can say about it. I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, yeah, it would have been greater if he had another woman that shut up and didn't say anything, but then who knows what he would have done? I don't know. He may have wound up staying on heroin and never getting off, you know, and ODing. I don't know. You just don't know, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, if for some reason in the fate of the world, he was supposed to be with Yoko, and she's supposed to be written in the annals of the Beatles' history as Yoko Ono, you know? I mean,
it makes for a great story.
Right. There you go.
Makes for a great story, but the only thing, again, is she started writing songs, and as George said in a rough cut of the anthology, that she created a wedge between the group. So I think
you
want to
see
the best
take on Yoko. Look at the Rock and Roll Circus of the Rolling Stones when John Lennon comes out. You haven't seen him play live for a long time. He comes out with Keith Richards on bass, Eric Clapton on guitar, Mitch Mitchell on drums, and he comes out and he's the coolest guy you ever saw, the singer, the voice, the badass attitude, and then Yoko comes up on stage, and even Clapton is like looking down like, oh my god.
Do you know what you know when she does that vocal styling? What she's doing? Do you know what she's doing?
Screaming.
I wish
she studied under Anthony Braxton. And if you ever listen to Anthony Braxton's sax playing, it's just like that. And that's what she's doing. She's imitating his sax playing.
I don't like
it. Yeah, well, you got to be an Anthony Braxton fan. You know, I'm not crazy about her either. But then again, I know people that just like Yoko and got that 10-CD set. And, you know, it's all subjective, you know. I'm going to have to buy you that, Randy, for... I'm going to buy you that one. That's going to come mysteriously in the mail to you from Amazon. So get rid of it.
Oh.
Yoko 10-CD box set.
Oh, God.
That's funny mail, boy.
I'd like to hear a sales figure on that. I'd like to hear how the sales figures on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Two.
Well, I'm sure it's probably sold more than my last record, I'm sure.
Nah. Billy, you actually produce music.
Correct.
Right.
Well, I have my fourth record called I have an ensemble called Ant B, and I've been around for 20 something years since my first record, and Actually, my first start in music, I played on Steve Vai's first record, but that was like 10 years previous to that. But at any rate, I just finished my fourth record. I don't have any funds yet to put it out, and I'm desperately looking for a label. But it features Peter Banks of Yes, Jan Ackerman of Focus, Zudhorn Rollo, and Rocket Morton of the Magic Band, Bunk Gardner, Don Preston, Jimmy Carl Black of the Mothers of Invention, Napoleon Murphy Brock of lead vocalist from Zappa's band, also Michael Bruce, who's my old buddy from the Alice Cooper group on several tracks, and David Allen and Jilly Smythe of Gong and Soft Machine. So it's got a big all-star, and Moogie Klingman of Todd Rundgren's Utopia. So I got a big all-star cast, which I'd have been on a major label if it was the 70s, but it's on the 2010, and I'm in desperate search for anybody to put the damn thing out. But at any rate, that's that. That's what I do. But yeah.
Okay, we've banged up on McCartney and Lennon. How about the other two folks? You got Ringo Starr and George Harrison. Now, how come they never ever seem to get mentioned in these discussions?
I did. I mentioned George.
Yeah, we mentioned him a couple times. You know, I mean, George had his highlights as well. And again, out of all the solo records, I first thought McCartney, the very first solo McCartney album was just, you know,
of
it was just awful.
God, like
a couple
grand.
Tracks on it was great. Maybe I'm Amazed, but some of it was just terrible on it, you know. And then compared to Ram, which I thought was an excellent
record. Oh, I thought you meant
record.
Ram. What is the first
one? No, Ram is great. McCartney, the one with the cherries on the cover,
it's
a mishmash, you know, and he even admitted it. Lennon's first solo album, the Plastic Ono record, but that's not really his first solo because he did Two Virgins and but the Plastic Ono album is great, you know, even though a bit of obscured. But Harrison's, again, I think, you know, like, you know, What Is Life and a couple of the tracks, I mean, there's so many great songs on that album, All Things Must Pass, but several of them could have been on a Beatles record and wouldn't have been any different, like What Is Life or something. You wouldn't have known any difference. You know, I mean, they sound so close to what was on Abbey Road. So,
I think Harrison
kind of went downhill and then kind of went uphill, and then, you know, he never maintained. Some of his records were like he phoned them in, sort of like of McCartney's.
I have a funny
records.
Harrison story. One of my first jobs out of school was I was a page at NBC, and we were ushers on Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
And Paul Simon and George Harrison hosted an episode, and they gave all the seats away to their friends, and nobody showed up. So at the last minute, we had to go out in the street and drag in all these old ladies from the Midwest or tourists, and just people in the street who didn't even know who they were practically, and fill the whole audience up with just paper the house with all these people who really didn't even care. It was really funny.
I remember seeing that show. Did you meet George or anything at that show?
No.
Wow. Hey, by the way, did you know that Randy played in the Fuzz Tones?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Is that good? Is that anybody care about that?
No, that's something legendary. You were in a legendary...
I was the first bass player in that band. They were Tina Peel, and then they became the Fuzz Tones.
Well, let's go to the phone lines. We have someone coming in from the 252 area code. Hello, 252?
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing very well. What's your question or comment for us?
I just want to comment on the expertise of the panel. I'm actually listening from North Carolina and have read one of John Cherry's previous books, and glad to hear him on the air, and just a really interesting discussion. So I just want to thank you for hosting this today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We love to create havoc on the airwaves.
Well, thank you, and great opinions, and, you know, this is a part of our history in this country and around the world, and it's just a real treat to hear your discussion. So just wanted to pass on my compliments.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for the call. It's nice of you.
You're welcome.
John, you found another fan.
All in North Carolina too, where I grew up and spent most of my life, except for the last few years.
Oh, that wasn't your mother, was it?
Yeah,
probably a relative though.
Suspicious call.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll have to investigate that call.
Okay. I'll say this about George as well. I mean, if you if you look at Abbey Road with Here Comes the Sun and Something Alone, beautiful songs, and I think he did get a little overshadowed by who he was working with to some degree, and he had to his songwriting developed as it went along, and some of it was kept off some of the albums, and you have to acknowledge that, unfortunately, to some degree. It'd be great if they could just kept doing double albums, then maybe we've gotten even more music. He was working on All Things Must Pass during Let It Be, so you got to see some of that. That was potentially.
There's another way you could look at this whole question that we started with. Instead of looking at sales figures and concert draw and stuff like that, really, as the years go by and you get further and further away from this, that stuff isn't going to mean much anymore. There's people who are huge that in our lifetime, that people have forgotten,
Yeah.
And they don't matter almost soon after the moment's gone. I think if you took the best six songs of these people and judge them solely on that, the ones that they're going to play on the radio 50 years from now, maybe the best three songs, maybe the best two songs, and judge,
right,
like who's the best, and that might be the most meaningful way to judge, if you really wanted to make a judgment call on something like that.
Right, because I mean, look, Grand Funk Railroad, they had one of the first bands to have 10 gold records in a row.
11 consecutive platinum albums.
Right, and then they sold out Shea Stadium faster than the Beatles. Yet hardly anybody remembers poor old Mark,
right,
Don and Mel, which is sad,
right.
And so those figures, no, but that's like, well, so what? Who are they? Sing the song. Todd Rundgren's another one. I mean, he's done all this stuff. Nobody really remembers who he is. So that's the thing about it with the figures and stuff. It is hard to judge it on that. But then again, you do have your point of view with that, and it does give a good basis to what your book is. There's no question about that. You did come up with figures, and that makes it more, your book valid.
Right. Well,
I think
it wasn't initially really part of my book. It really was the last part, or towards the last, as you can see in there, that as I was writing, I was just writing, keeping figures of what the single.
Well, that was a good thing to put in there. That was a smart
right.
thing to put in there at the end,
mm-hmm.
seriously.
Thank you. Yeah.
I think with George Harrison, I like the fact that he's probably very, very, very well respected among a lot of musicians, Jeff Lynne, Tom Petty, that group, Dylan, and his influence on all the who knows what kind of discussions they had, and all the creative conversations and late nights of whatever. I mean, so I think looking at like collaborations and opinions of other artists, I would be curious to hear them have the discussion that we're having today. I think that'd be nice.
That band, the Wilburys, is to me the kind of stuff I want to see big stars do.
Right.
Don't get just faithless sidemen. Go out and let Dylan play with Harrison, with Roy Orbison. Unbelievable. That was
right.
so brave and so cool. I mean, that was so egoless for him to, like, just be a guy in a band that with everybody was as big as practically as he was. And, that was amazing. And I love when they wrote that song, that everybody had a moment. And it sounded like the song, each guy wrote one little chunk of the song, and you could just hear that personality come through. God, Roy Orbison was so cool, wasn't he?
But that's the cool. I mean, McCartney ought to, because like Dylan did something with Brian Wilson, which you hardly ever heard it. But and then there's a track that Zappa did with Van Morrison together, and those things are kind of cool. Actually, it would be great if McCartney did an album with Brian Wilson. They've only been buddies for 40 years.
Well, the good thing is that McCartney, a lot of times when collaborations happen, they don't nothing spectacular comes out because these guys aren't band leaders. And I think like McCartney could probably really
bring
something
out
like that happen the way that George did. The problem is I think George was a little bit more egoless, and that's a good thing to happen. But at the same time, maybe somebody like Dylan, a guy like you need somebody to maybe be a little muscular because a lot of these people are kind of like flighty, maybe and McCartney might just kind of have. Keep it nailed down, It'd be fun to see him do something like that. But,
or see, McCartney and Jeff Lynne would be a great thing together. I think that would be interesting.
They did work on Flaming Pie, not necessarily on the songs, but, Jeff produced 8 of those songs on Flaming
right.
Pie. So, yeah, they
but
did. And also,
as a collaborative thing, because Jeff Lynne's a huge yeah. Beatles fanatic, obviously.
Right.
The ability to collaborate, I can tell you, I have almost purposely maintained my skills in a way that I need to collaborate with people. You know, I don't really sing much, and I don't play a chord instrument. I play bass, and I play, you know, harp, but I write a lot of stuff, and lyrics and melodies and stuff, but I almost have to collaborate with other people, you know?
Right.
And I think it's, I notice in great musicians that I play with, it's, some people are good at it, and some people cannot do it. They it's all them, and they don't know how to collaborate, and they, and you, and it's frustrating because you get these guys that you love the way they play the guitar or something, or they come up with great riffs, but they're such pigs in the studio that they can't,
right.
You can't work with them. You can't you know, they, you put an idea out and they don't pay attention to you, you know, and or they don't, you can't get the, you know, you can't get the back and forth thing happening, and that's hard to know if somebody's like that watching them from a distance, you know, in the charts or something. But I think that's what stands in the way of a lot of great music, is that people can't collaborate. The Beatles obviously could. I mean, for it to be as talented as Lennon and McCartney and let somebody else finish your song off, I mean, imagine that. Imagine, like, you know, John Lennon going, "Paul, you got me, you know, turning to you and going, you got anything for this?" You know what I mean? Like, oh, blah, 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 blah. You know?
Right.
I mean, but then part of the skill is making the people that you're working with relax and feel that they're good enough to throw something in with you, you know, and you need that back from them too. And that's a talent that is maybe invisible sometimes to the public, you know, but you can see if people, you can tell over a career that this guy doesn't really collaborate with anybody, you know, and he should, because basically, I mean, you take a guy, even like Elton John or Paul McCartney, they have dry spells. I mean, these guys who can just keep throwing the songs at it, after 20 years, it could re-spark their career if they started a band with another great songwriter, you know, I mean, and try to, you know, make some new magic happen, instead of, you know, after a while, everybody's going to run out of ideas.
Sure.
Well, I mean,
incorporate
with collaborating, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, same. I mean, I've had Michael Bruce was the first person I ever considered my Paul McCartney. Because when me and him got together,
he wrote
all the hits for Alice. But, you know, when me and him sit together, it's like sitting with a partner, and we sit there and come up with so much. He lived in my house, and we sat there and came up, I don't know how many songs. Like, it was,
well,
like,
you know what? You
and he's a huge Beatles fan, by the way. But that's why Alice's stuff was so great, because Michael wrote most of it. He collaborated with,
you talk,
you know,
about who is the better musician. You know, a lot of times you'll there'll be a band, and there's somebody who's almost invisible in the band. Like, they don't sing. They're kind of don't move much on stage, but somehow you take that person out, and then the band just falls apart.
Right.
A lot of times you don't know, you know, like what. But to me, I mean, I know so many great, let's just say, guitar players who I really wanted to play
Jeff
with.
Jeff Campbell.
But I couldn't get anything going with them because they were difficult people and they were selfish, and they didn't know how to, you know, didn't have the people skills, and to me they were not a good musician. Somebody who couldn't play as well, but could collaborate with, and you could write good songs with, they were a better musician, you know, because you can work with them. It's really, unless you're a solo genius like a Segovia or something, you've got to work with other people, and those skills are almost as, what was it, B.B. King had that great line, you know, you've got, musicians got to be, you know, at least 50% man, you know, it's like, in other words, the personality is at least as important as anything else.
Right,
you know?
Exactly, particularly if you're touring. You
know. Well, I'm going to say McCartney did in the 80s. You know, he worked with Elvis, Michael Jackson, unfortunately, particularly one song with Stevie Wonder and Eric Stewart. Yeah, he did do that, and he hasn't done it as much lately. And I'd like to see it every now and then just as a change, even though I don't think his last, you know, like I mentioned, his last three CDs, he hasn't seemed to have suffered too much for it.
No, I mean, the last two ones were great. But one thing is, I thought that, you know, I didn't think. Oh no! I thought the two songs we did with Michael Jackson. I mean, look. You know, again, you're looking at figures. I mean, and I'm not a Michael. I like the Jackson 5. I'm not a fan of his other later stuff. But I thought they were okay songs. I mean, they were the best things I heard from Michael Jackson in a million years. And I think
they put out a box set of McCartney stuff, and I had just gotten this big, beautiful high def television and plugged it into this fantastic stereo. And I stuck that in, and Say comes up. Boy, that video just blew me away. It was.
I mean,
amazing.
I thought those. And they were big. They weren't they? I mean, weren't they like number one, number two hits? I don't know why you would say that they were that bad, really. Other than you personally don't like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
that might be the reason why, you know.
Well, the girl is mine. The girl is mine. The one that I fixate on. That is, as far as being, I think.
I don't know. It just sounds like an old Motown song. That song, you know. I mean, did Paul say? He did say, and he did another one called "That Girl Is Mine." But did Paul ever say he didn't like those songs?
He didn't want to do that spoken part of the song, which Michael and Quincy Jones convinced him to do it. And I really think that was one of the most. I think I mentioned in the book. I thought it was one of the most embarrassing moments of his musical career.
What is the spoken thing? I forget.
He just says, "I'm a lover, not a fighter." And
That's right.
I don't know. Didn't that song? Wasn't that song a hit song?
Yeah.
The say or which one?
No, the girl is mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
the doggone girl is mine, you know. It's like it was an old sort of Motown sound. I don't know why you thought it was so horrible. I mean, I'm not a Michael Jackson fan, but I thought that, I don't know. I mean, I even went and bought the single.
Maybe just that spoken part I just thought was just not Paul McCartney.
Interesting.
Ask.
Well, nothing's, you know,
people.
I mean,
I was talking about, like, famous duos, I was thinking Mike Campbell and Tom Petty also come to my mind. I'm thinking of two people, that, you know, great musicians. They've been able to work together, and just they each have their roles. And I talk about them in my book a little bit, but they came to mind when two people just working together and just
coming up with good songs.
Some good songs, man. Totally.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing in the whole process of music is sitting down and pulling just magic out of the ether. You know, it's more than performing or recording or anything. I just those moments when you just when the thing just appears. You know, it's magic. It's just the most fun thing of the whole thing to me.
Well, you never know when you work with somebody that's so good that something that you're saying or working on, whatever, is going to inspire them to something else that you're not going to be able to come up with. I mean, it is.
But it's so subtle, too, because, you know, you come in, everybody comes into these situations with so much emotional baggage and insecurities and ego strength and stuff like that, and it's such a push-pull thing. And you know, I've been with guys who are really, really fast, you know, being creative and it's great. And then sometimes they're too fast, and they kind of roll over you a little bit, you know. And it's like it's such a subtle push pull thing, you know, to make it work. And you know, you want to stand up for yourself, but you don't want to stand up for yourself too much because then you're just kind of being a pig, you know. And it's difficult. It can be really easy. It can be amazingly easy, but it's a magic combination thing, and you've got to sometimes bite your tongue and just, you know, let it flow out. You gotta be very adult, you know, and yet in touch with your childlike, you know, sense of wonder at the same time. It is one of the more magical things that happens in the whole musical realm, I think, is that collaboration thing. Just because a lot of these people come in, you gotta have a strong ego, but at the same time you gotta be almost egoless at the same time. You know, back and forth with that. You know, Because you have this idea that's maybe a little out on a limb, and you're maybe almost shy about it, and yet at the same, you're going to put it out there, but you want to be strong enough to really push your idea, but at the same time let somebody mess around with it, you know, and change it kind of right in front of you, you know.
I think McCarty does do that with his producers to some degree now. You know, he's used Youth and Nigel Godrich, and you know, I think they, if you read the backgrounds of the albums, you know, they've made some contribution actually. Youth convinced Paul to, in this latest Fireman production, to use lyrics for the first time. You know, before he was just using electronic sound. So, you know, he is getting some help there. But I do agree with all of y'all. It'd be nice to see some experiments with some different guys, and maybe bring back Elvis Costello or some of the people that y'all mentioned. Y'all know more than me about this. So, I would like to see it, and maybe it'll happen.
Let's take a quick call. We have someone coming in from the 323 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, my name is Bob, and my question is, I kind of wrote half-jokingly that Paul should collaborate with Neil Innes from the Ruddles, because Neil does a great Lennon, and the Ruddles is very Beatlesque, but I joke because I don't think Paul look too kindly on that project. Am I mistaken about that?
He didn't like it.
I've never heard the. Am I still on here? Hello?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, yeah, I got flipped off there for a minute. I never heard anything whether he liked the Ruddles thing or not, but he does do a great Lennon. especially I got a demo of actually the song Cheese and Onions, you know, and I got a demo, and I still can't tell if it's Lennon or a demo from Neil Innes or not.
And Innes writes very Lennonist songs, whether he wants to or not, but, you know, unfortunately with the shadow of the Ruddles looming so large, Paul probably would not do it, but it would be very simpatico together.
It'd be interesting. That'd be quite interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing on those Ruddles records is they never really got a great McCartney voice. I forget who they were using. I think it was Ollie Hassel. And he tried to sound McCartney-esque, but he couldn't on some of those things, like Double Back Alley or whatever.
Right.
But certainly Paul could do a great Paul voice. Probably.
No, it wasn't the guy from the Monty Python. What's his name? That was the one who was doing the Paul character, wasn't doing the
no,
vocal
on the
record?
No, it wasn't Eric Idle, no.
It wasn't him?
No, he lip-synced everything.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a
sounded like the voice, almost. Okay.
Yeah, a guy used to be in a group called Tato with John Halsey, who was the drummer, named Ollie Hassel, who I believe is dead now, but he was probably a great guitarist, and he did the Paul vocals.
So you were in the band called Pato, P-A-T-T-O?
Boxer.
Right,
yeah, he was in Boxer with Bogart, yeah.
Huh. Right, and that's also some great music to worth, well worth checking
out.
How
about McCartney do a song with the Stones? That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. I really can't see it now because the Stones have become such a parody of themselves. You know.
You know, it's funny because in some ways they are, but some of those live videos I've been seeing of them lately, I said, God, they're better than they ever were. And yet that one that Scorsese did, I'm watching Keith Richards, and I'm going, he's posing and he's not playing. I was really disappointed in him on that.
At his age and his shape, he was probably having a minor stroke at the time.
Is it true that the Stones have a concert rider about wheelchair access to the stage?
It could very well be. And that would be certainly a great collaboration. I guess the only time they really collaborated was on We Love You, when John and Paul sang background vocals on the Stones
right,
track.
Right.
And I guess,
just for history's sake, to have the Beatles and the Stones together would be fun. I mean, it's like the title of the book. It's a hook. You know, it's a hook that can inspire maybe something, you know, to happen if the hook is big enough. You know, just like, okay, this is obviously a self-conscious thing that the fans want to see this. Let's just do it and see what. And then, but maybe that would force something to happen. You know.
Well, you know, right. If Bill Wyman left, they need a they need a regular bassist. And
well, they've had the same bass player, probably not to join the Stones. I would.
Well, they would have
sure
my
you would.
Money.
Sure you would. Believe me, you would. I guarantee you.
Oh, I'd be in the front row. Are you kidding? Well, again, this is a great debate. I love it, but it's like saying, who would win in a fight, Superman or the Hulk? You know, it's just something that, you know, we really can't solve. It's just our, our preferences for these two great guys, you know. I mean, these
right.
two megastars, he's like debating Mozart versus Bach or something. You know.
Right. To make a personal plug, you know, maybe just I hope people will buy the book and again, and maybe they will comment as a result of that to see the type of comments that you're making. That's what they think afterwards, and that would, you know, I'll understand. But hopefully, can to generate even more discussion, and we all might learn from that.
Well, you need to contact all the Beatle fan magazine in England, and there's a ton of Beatle related places that you need to send out information about the book to. You know, if you really want to get it going, you know, I mean, and if you get Beatle fan to write something about it, then you're going to get tons of people finding out about it.
I just ordered the book from Amazon, by the way.
Thank you very much.
And
it is on Amazon and some other sites as well, besides my website.
Yeah, it was an interesting cover.
Thank you. Yeah, that's part of the contest of
right.
what they all mean.
Uh-huh.
A little take off on Sergeant Pepper and a few other things.
Yeah, a lot of clues there.
Yes.
Well, gentlemen, keep up the good work, and please, you know, let's keep this nice and civil, no fisticuffs.
Oh,
and
absolutely not.
And remember, we all shine on.
That's
right.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, we're into about the last minute of the broadcast, so I want to go around the panel and say thank you and get your last comments. Start with you, Billy.
Well, there's good luck on your book, and you know, you probably will do well with it because you know, regardless if you thought about doing the angle or not, you know, that's a good angle to sell the thing at, because people are, it's going to you know, create you know, controversy no matter what. So, you know, I'm curious. You know, you need to let Simon let us know what goes on and what kind of feedback you get with it, because I'm curious myself. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of passionate responses. So, good luck with it.
Thank you,
Trace.
Hey guys, all you need is love.
Ah, short but sweet. Okay. Randy.
Yeah, I mean, the title of the book is annoying and obnoxious, and yet it's a conversation starter, and it's a hook, and I think it was brave of you to do it, and I think it's cool. So it's good.
Thank you,
Randy. And John. Your parting thoughts. These people have done their best to shred you. Did they succeed?
I think we had a very civil argument where we all learned a little bit, and I don't feel shredded. But I want to say I'm honored to be on with such a distinguished group of people and their knowledge of music. I hope to tap into in the future as well. And I hope everybody will take a chance to read the book. Let's get some comments going. Simon, you and I can stay in touch about it and hopefully let everybody know what we're hearing from the people who read the book.
This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great day. This has been another of our broadcasts from Blogger News Network. Stay safe. And try and avoid people like us. I'll talk to you all again soon. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you, Tom.
Bye.